Find signs of it everywhere you go. Step out your front door and feel beneath your feet the thrum of subway tunnels and electric cables, mossy aqueducts and pneumatic tubes, all interweaving and overlapping like threads in a great loom. At the end of a quiet street, find vapor streaming out of a ventilation grate, which may rise from a hidden tunnel where outcasts dwell in jerry-rigged shanties, or from a clandestine bunker with dense concrete walls where the elite will flee to escape the end of days. On a long stroll through quiet pasture land, you rub your hands over a grassy mound that may conceal the tomb of an ancient tribal queen or the buried fossil of a prehistoric beast with a long, snaking spine. If the surface of the earth were transparent, we'd spend days on our bellies, peering down into the marvelous layered terrain. But for us surface dwellers, going about our lives in the sunlit world, the underground has always been invisible. As a boy, I knew that the underworld was not always invisible. To certain people, it could be revealed. The summer I turned 16, when my world felt as small and known as the tip of my finger, I discovered an abandoned train tunnel running beneath my neighborhood in Providence, Rhode Island. I'd heard about it first from a science teacher at school. Now it was a ruin, full of mud and garbage and stale air and who knew what else. One afternoon I found the entrance, which was concealed under a thicket of bushes. It was wreathed in vines and had the date of its construction, 1908, engraved in concrete above its mouth. The city had sealed the entrance with a metal grate, but someone had sliced open a small passageway. Along with a few friends, I climbed underground, our flashlight beams crisscrossing in the dark. The mud sucked at our shoes and the air was boggy. On the ceiling were clusters of pearly, nipple-like stalactites that dripped water down on our heads. Halfway through, we dared one another to switch off our lights. As the tunnel fell to perfect darkness, my friends whooped, testing the echo, but I held my breath and stood dead still, as though if I moved, I might float right off the ground. That night at home, I pulled up an old map of Providence. I started with my finger where we'd entered the tunnel and moved to where it opened at the other end. I blinked. The tunnel passed almost directly beneath my house. That's from the opening of Underground, a human history of the worlds beneath our feet. I'm guessing we all have tales of the underworld, of the underground. As we just heard, our author opens his book with his discovery of a no longer used train tunnel underneath the pavement of his Providence, Rhode Island neighborhood. It was a new world that opened to his eyes, his ears, his mind, that he goes on to tell us stuck with him through life and prompted him to spend year after year rummaging around the underworld of our earth and to write this book as a response to his journeys. And so it is that today's book takes us back to and much deeper into the world that is the underground, the good, the wondrous, the ugly. As he writes a little bit further into his tale, deep in that tunnel, I found a source, a crack in the ceiling, a burst pipe maybe, or a leak, from which water was pouring down in cascades. Directly beneath the falling water, I saw an overturned plastic beach pail, then a paint bucket. Then all at once an enormous assembly of overturned containers, oil drums, beer cans, Tupperware, gas containers, coffee tins, all in a giant cluster arranged under mysterious circumstances by a person I'd never met. The water drummed down on the vessel, sending up an echoing song as I stood in the dark, nailed to the floor. I came to love the underground for its silence and for its echoes. I loved that even the briefest trip into a tunnel or a cave felt like an escape into a parallel reality, the way characters in children's books vanish through portals into secret worlds. I loved that the underground offered romping Tom Sawyerish adventure, just as it opened confrontation with humankind's most eternal and elemental fears. I love telling stories about the underground, about relics discovered beneath city streets, or rituals conducted in the depths of caves, and the wonder they engendered in the eyes of my friends. Most of all, I was captivated by the dreamers, visionaries, and eccentrics that the underground attracted, people who'd heard a kind of siren song and given themselves to exploring, making art, or praying in the underground world. People who had surrendered to obsession in a way that I thought I understood, or at least wanted to understand. Down in the dark, I thought I might find a perverse kind of enlightenment. Each chapter in this book unfolds like a mini mystery novel. Our author sets out a question about the world we cannot see, throws in some historical, literary, pop culture references, and then takes us with him on his journey of discovery, which more often than not includes more than one hands-on trip to visit, to explore, to encounter the places our author can find answers. I found reading Underground addictive and fun. After all, who hasn't been wrapped up with H.G. Wells' Journey to the Center of the Earth, in which our protagonists discover Wells' center of the Earth by dropping into an extinct volcano? Not all of us get to do that, but many of us have at least explored that strange tunnel underneath the street or maybe a cave nearby or far away. And who today would not be taken in by well-meaning charlatans who claimed our Earth is composed of concentric circles of earth and rock, as retired American military Captain Sims so famously claimed in the 1820s and the 1830s? We get to spend a chapter with that engaging crackpot near the middle of our book. And then there is the science of the underground, too. Author Will Hunt takes us on a journey into the science and the psychological fantasy of sensory deprivation, which can be found rather easily by spending time in a deep, dark cave. A chapter that is as much a launching point for further exploration as it is an exploration of the topic at hand, as are so many chapters in this book. And sometimes in these pages, our author delights in standing conventional scientific wisdom on its head, asking, for instance, did life on Earth begin underground and not in those warm surface tidal pools we've suspected for so many, many decades? Have we been asking the wrong question about the origins of life for well over 150 years? Did it indeed start in the water coursing through the underground caves of our planet? Did the Greeks and the ancient Americans perhaps have the first insight into this quandary about the beginning of life all along? For many of their tales of the beginning of life starts underground and not above. And speaking of more modern times, is there a reason, beyond a love of fantasy, that Native American miners in the highlands of Bolivia have developed a collection of rituals meant to assuage the capricious spirit that they claim infests the Potosi Mountains they mine? Well, this is hardly the stuff of ancient mythology and fears. We learn through our author's pen that this very contemporary series of rituals is an active and living response to the other world these miners feel they are living with in their underground jobs every day today. Far, far away on a far-flung continent, we travel to learn that a number of the original people of Australia remember an intimate relationship with the world of the underground as well, showing us that humankind's fascination with, as well as fear and awe, of this ghost or this shadow world, as our author describes it, is long and it is deep. Our author speaks openly of the understandable difficulty he had reaching out to an Aboriginal Australian elder who would still speak of and to the Australian Native people's interaction with the underworld. It's yet another moving and insightful chapter in this book. And so we go around the world, but more importantly, into and under the Earth's surface, exploring, musing, wondering at a world about which we know so little and have feared for so long. As our author writes a bit further into Underground, as our ancestors circled the planet, every culture in the world told stories of portals, where heroes traveled through dark passages in Earth and entered the spirit world, then returned to the surface, endowed with sacred wisdom, just as Pythagoras traveled to Hades through the Cretan cave. So did cultural heroes all over the world, from the Maya and the Celts to the ancient Norsemen and the Navajo. Even Jesus Christ descended to the underworld by way of the subterranean dark zone in the harrowing of hell in the Gospel of Nicodemus, one of the apocryphal books that was initially excised from the Bible. Jesus is enclosed in his rocky tomb, which we recall as a cave with a stone rolled over the entrance. From within the darkness of the cave, Jesus departs from his earthly body and descends into hell, to the lowest places, where he preaches to the dead and frees wrongly imprisoned souls. It is from the underworld that Jesus is resurrected and ascends to heaven. He goes on to talk about the tale of Gilgamesh and about other tales from long ago and from more recent years, where these portals into the other world happen through the underground of the earth. From time to time, our author writes about the underground world in terms that I remember science adventurers writing about the ocean worlds in the late 1900s as those bold new places that reflect our interest in traveling to those great unknown reaches of the Earth's moon and our neighboring planet Mars. Only these places, these vast and unexplored reaches of the underground world, are here on Earth. Our journey into this mysterious world of the depths ends as it begins, with our author remembering that personal, epical discovery for him in his Providence, Rhode Island neighborhood so many years ago. As he writes, "Something in us has withered. We in the West have become hardened to the world, numb to certain shadowy textures in nature, dull to what David Abram called the songs, cries, and gestures of the earth. The underground teaches us to respect mystery. We live in a world obsessed with illumination, where we blaze our floodlights over every secret, strive to reveal every furrow, to root out every last trace of darkness, as though it were a kind of vermin. In our connection to subterranean space, we ease our suspicion of the unknown and recognize that not everything should be revealed, not all the time. The underground helps us to accept that there will always be lacunae, always blind spots. It reminds us that we are disorderly, irrational creatures susceptible to magical thinking and flights of dreaming and bouts of lostness, and that these are our greatest gifts. The underground reminds us of what our ancestors always knew. There is forever power and beauty in the unspoken and unseen." The priest and ecologist Thomas Berry once wrote that as we carry through life searching for truth and meaning in the world, quote, "we are like a musician who faintly hears a melody deep within the mind, but not clearly enough to play it through. In the subterranean dark, I learned to listen to that faint melody. And I learned the myriad and beautiful ways in which it cannot be played." From Underground, A Human History of the Worlds Beneath Our Feet by Will Hunt. Quite a read. It's available at all of our fine local libraries, including, of course, the West Lafayette Public Library.